Good evening, a special share on the Haggadah. I hope that all of you enjoy it. I assume we're learning Le'ilut Nishmat famous last night, and I'd also like to basically dedicate a lot of my shiurim, not because they taught what I have to say, except that they opened my mind in terms of trying to think for myself, and that would be Rabbi Alpert first, Rabbi Parnas, and Rabbi Bornstein from YU. Rabbi Parnas is still going, and he's somewhere late in his 90s, and I thank him because Rabbi Alpert certainly had a great effect on me because I was only 11, but I remember so much from him, Rabbi Parnas, who impressed me with the fact that he let me know right to my face that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was, and Rabbi Bornstein, who a little bit on the same level, taught me more how to think for myself. And the reason I say all this is particularly for one simple reason, that a lot of thoughts that we could have easily can be thought of for other people. We shouldn't be afraid to have novel thoughts because, as we've said so many times, Shivim Panim LaTorah, as long as it doesn't have to do with halacha, you could read over a pasuk and say, what is that pasuk saying to me? Which is why I always tell people, the students that I've taught, just say over a pasuk sometimes 8 or 9 times in your mind, 10 times, whatever, and see if it makes sense. Of course, most seemingly do, but there are many times when a lot of the pasukim don't seem to make any sense whatsoever, not in the truest sense, or certainly not the way we learned it in yeshiva, if we had that experience. But there is more often than not, either the Gemara or a lot of the Rishonim also take issue with a lot of the way that God expressed the pasukim, and obviously there are messages that you have to read between the lines. And whatever it means to you is why we don't explain things, why there's no punctuation, and there's not even any vowels on the words, because sometimes the Gemara takes apart a pasuk and we read it in a different way. What I wanted to do is finish off first the Haftorah. And what I said last night, V'heshiv lev avos arbonim v'lev bonim al avosam. Right before those two pasukim, we have Zichru Toras Moshe Avdi. The reason why this meant so much to me, because as I mentioned last night, that my grandfather who died with the chametz in his hand was named Moshe. And so, of course, to me, it meant a lot because his yahrzeit is always Shabbos HaGadol. And we have Shabbos HaGadol, and we always ask the question, there's so many different explanations of why the Shabbos is called Shabbos HaGadol. We don't do anything special except for the Haftorah itself. And there's various speculation why it's HaGadol, the big drasha that the rabbi has. But the reality is that they were looking, Chazal, as pointed out, had to give it a special name. Actually, the 10th day of Nisan is the Shabbos, and that is the year the B'nai Yisrael in 2448, the year they left Mitzrayim, was Shabbos HaGadol, or the 10th day of Nisan came out on Shabbos, and then they left the way it comes out this year, Pesach, on Wednesday night would be the night of Makos Bechoros, and that they left in the morning on Thursday morning. And that is the way they traveled at that same way it comes out this year. But getting back to the Haftorah, it says Zichru Toras Moshe Avdi. And of course, we might think to say the pasuk after that is Hinei Onoki Sholeach Lachem Es Eliyahu Hanavi Lifnei Yom Bo Hagadol VaHanora. Is why would you think that God had to send Eliyahu Hanavi? And we've mentioned this before, but it's very important to bring this to light because of the way the Seder is conducted on Pesach night with the kosher Eliyahu and opening up the door to let Eliyahu in by Shefor Hamoscha because various things. But why does God have to send Eliyahu Hanavi in particular? And you would think possibly if we want to do tshuva, Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael. He was Torah Tzivolonu Moshe, Morashah Kehilas Yaakov. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah. He's responsible for everything. He began it all in terms of the Torah with the mitzvot, teaching it for 40 years. He gave up his life more than anybody else in history to do it. He gave up his family life and everything that goes along with it. But the fact remains, Moshe Rabbeinu has died. Moshe Rabbeinu, when it says, Vayomos Moshe Eved Hashem, it says that. However, by Leo, Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem Es Eliyahu Hanavi, why does God have to choose Eliyahu Hanavi? And on one level, it would seem very obvious, because Moshe Rabbeinu on his own was always, okay, you made a mistake, tomorrow you'll do better. Eliyahu HaNavi, on the other hand, was fire and brimstone, and he brooked no insurrection. He brought about many calamities to Klal Yisrael when they did not obey all the rules that he set forth, and whenever they went astray, he brought destruction to them and told them. He brooked no insurrection whatsoever. He was very forceful and very direct. He was not at all like Moshe Rabbeinu. So one would think, to get us to do tshuva, maybe we should send Moshe Rabbeinu and he would affect it. There's a major problem with that, and the problem is a twofold problem. Number one, it's lefnei yom bo hagadol v'hanora. When Mashiach comes and you're not ready to receive it, it's over. Lefnei yom bo hagadol v'hanora is the last day. Tomorrow never comes, because that day when things are done and dusted, so to speak, it's over. So there's only one person who could scare you into straightening out your life on a blink of an eye, to scare you with scared straight, as we would say in today's parlance, but it would be Eliyahu HaNavi. And on Moshe Rabbeinu, he would say, all right, there'll be another day tomorrow, you'll do better, but there is no tomorrow. Lefnei yom bo hagadol v'hanora. So it has to be Eliyahu. But on another level, it has to be Eliyahu for another reason. And that is because, since I said Moshe Rabbeinu has passed away, he's no longer with us. The sequence of events is, as we say in every Shabbos, when we say right before Kel Odon, we say, Ein kerkecho Hashem Elokeinu ba'olam hazeh, v'ein zulascha malkeinu l'olam haba. Efes b'ltecho go'aleinu limos ha-moshiach, v'ein dom l'cho moshienu l'schiyas ha-nesef. What is the sequence of those four psukim? And that is the order of events and how they will take place. Initially, right now, we're living in olam hazeh. Then comes Olam Haba. And then comes what? The last thing on the list is Tchias HaMeisim. So Eliyahu HaNavi never died. He went up to Shemayim Besara Seish. Of course, he didn't go to Shemayim. But where is Eliyahu HaNavi? We have all these stories in the Gemara where they met various Tanoim, met Eliyahu HaNavi in a graveyard, and they had dealings with him. We have a Kabbalah that Eliyahu HaNavi, the Kisei Sher Eliyahu, comes to a bris. How do we have that thought if he died? It's not Tchias HaMeisim yet. The truth is, Eliyahu HaNavi, as we know, never died. He's still alive. Where is he? Well, he is, according to Abarbanel, he's in a, what we would call a holding pen, but someplace in Gan Eden is a certain place that is in a different level, a different sphere, where he's able to communicate and come when he's called, when it's necessary. So when we open up the door for Shvoch HaMoscha, it's not necessarily that we expect or have a right to expect that Eliyahu HaNavi comes in, but when we open up that door by Shvoch HaMoscha, what we're doing is we're, just the fact that we open up the door, is we're letting him into our hearts. We're opening up the door and we're praying that it's Eliyahu HaNavi is coming, because that Gula Shalema will come when Eliyahu HaNavi comes. Hine Anokhi Sholeach Lachem Es Eliyahu HaNavi. We're hoping that that's when it is. We have a tradition that Mashiach, Gula Shalema will come on Pesach, L'Leil Shimurim. And therefore, when we open up the door, we're thinking maybe if we let him into our hearts and really straighten out our lives at this point in time, we letting him in, letting him in not into our house, but letting him into ourselves to permeate our thought process in our hearts so that we could do tshuva the way it is. Lefnei yom bo hagadol v'hanora. And that is the point why Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem Es Eliyahu HaNavi. Has nothing to do with, as some people might say, you would get the wrong impression that possibly if we're sending you Eliyahu HaNavi and not Moshe, that maybe Eliyahu HaNavi is greater than Moshe. Not at all. But Moshe is not here. When Mashiach comes and there is eventually the age of Tchias HaMeisim does come, then Moshe Rabbeinu will return. But prior to that, there's only one person available, and that is Eliyahu HaNavi, who has not left us. At least he's in our hearts at the time, and we call him by a bris, and the people that met him in the cemeteries do that. Now, how do we start off the Seder and we put all of this in our mind? If we have this, and we have Shabbos HaGadol. By the way, as I started to say, what is the reason that we call it Shabbos HaGadol away? Also, because the truth of the matter is, 40 years later, after they left Mitzrayim in the year 2488, when they crossed the Yarden, it happened to be, as this year comes out, Shabbos HaGadol is the 10th day of Nisan. And the crossing of the Yarden happened as well on the 10th day of Nisan, which it says, because Moshe, and what is the significance of the 10th day of Nisan? Because it says that day, that it was the 10th day of Nisan, that is exactly how we know with the date of Moshe's death. Otherwise, we wouldn't know it, because they observed the mourning period of 30 days, it says. And in the beginning of Yoshua, it says, after 3 days, they crossed the Yarden. Backtracking 33 days from the 10th day of Nisan, as it says in Yoshua, brings us to Zion Adar, and that's how we know Moshe Rabbeinu's Yahrzeit. How do we know that it's his birthday? Because certainly we have a tradition that a tzaddik, certainly on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, he lived full years. It was the day he was born would be the day he died. A tzaddik of that caliber certainly dies on his birthday. He would die then. He lived Mashlim Shanosov Shel Tzadik. And certainly Moshe Rabbeinu could be nobody greater than that. And so that's how we know. But since they crossed it on the 10th day of Nisan, not to take away anything from the crossing of the Yarden or from Shabbos HaGadol, we give Shabbos HaGadol a moniker of Shabbos HaGadol to differentiate it from the 10th day of Nisan 40 years later that it would be when they crossed the Yarden. That's just to put that aside. And now we move on. When we come home from that, is the end of the Haftorah, the importance of the Haftorah on Shabbos HaGadol. Of course, interestingly enough, if you see in some minhagim are to read part of the Haggadah on the night of Shabbos HaGadol, we read part of the Haggadah. What is the purpose of reading part of the Haggadah? Is doing, so to speak, a dress rehearsal. Because don't forget, we're having to say that normally, when the light was hard to come by and we would light candles before electricity, when the candles would go out, and if we're having to stay the late, we wouldn't be able to see anything, and we wouldn't have the text would be dark in the room, so that if we studied the Haggadah beforehand, we would be able to at least recite it on some level by heart, or just be able to see enough so that we could say the whole Haggadah. Of course, the Haggadah itself came about on a very, as need to know basis, because obviously the stories in the Haggadah are over the course of 1,000 years, and if we have a Kabbalah that Eliyahu HaNavi, here's another thought process. If Eliyahu HaNavi wrote the Haggadah, gave us the Haggadah as we know it today to at least some degree, then how did he couldn't have written it in his time, obviously, because many of the events happened long after, when we talk about all the Tanoim and Amoraim and the stories with the Elazar ben Azariah and so on and so forth, other people, they happened long after Eliyahu HaNavi was no longer here. So it would have to be that he was alive and somehow communicated with the Chachamim of the time when they met him in various times throughout history. This is a very difficult thought process, but, you could speculate on your own. These are not important things to accept as they're told. These are midrashim. But as we move on, we come home from shul, and the first thing that we do all the time on every yontif, but certainly on Pesach, it's more appropriate. The first thing we want to do is put ourselves in the right frame of mind. And how do we do that? We make Kiddush. We come home, and we announce is a leader of the Seder, and he starts off Kadesh, Urachatz, Karpas, Yachatz. We read all the 15 simonim that will take place during the evening so that we begin to have a sense of the order of things. We make a list of things that we have to accomplish, things that we have to do and say during the course of the evening, which is very important. But so we begin with Kadesh. We bless the day, we bless the time, and we begin our Yontif for Pesach with making Kiddush. And after we make Kiddush, it comes along the beginning of the Seder. And what is the beginning of the Seder? right away, the first thing is that we say, after we say Shechiyonu v'kimonu v'giyonu l'azman hazeh, that we make the Shechiyonu, and we say Holach Ma'anya. Now, there are so many different problems with Holach Ma'anya. Of course, the one very basic thing is, we ask the first question is, why is it written in Aramaic, which we all have been told because the Jews were in Bavel, or wherever they were at the time, they didn't read Hebrew, a lot of them, or even if they did, it's just the symbolic language that they used at that time, since they were in Gullah, since they're in exile, as we are today, and they would understand the part as well. And the Haggadah is bracketed by Aramaic at the beginning, and all the songs that the Zmiros that we sing at the end, it also ends with the Chag Gadol is as well, is also in Aramaic. The Haggadah is bracketed in that respect, so we start and we finish the same thing. But the language in Holach Ma'anya is very difficult. And Holach Ma'anya, if we look at the words, Yachol Avatona B'Arad Mitzrayim, now it says two things, Kol Dichrin Yesev Yechol, whoever wants to eat, come and eat. And this, obviously, this couldn't be in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. We couldn't possibly say that because we knew the Korban Pesach can only be eaten for those who signed up. You had to know that there was X amount of meat available, and you would sign up because you didn't want to have any leftovers. You're not allowed, as we learn in next week's Parsha. After Pesach, we read Parsha Shemini, and we'll read also Pigel Hu Lo Yiratzeh. What is pigle? If you leave over, you have the wrong thoughts, or you eat it for a longer period of time that you're allowed, is pigle, and you have to burn it. Vanosom imenu adboka beish tisrofu, you have to burn it. And we don't want to burn unnecessarily, especially for those of us who couldn't afford meat, was very scarce and very expensive, and therefore we wouldn't want to have anything to go waste, and we would make an apportionment of, we know from experience how many pounds of meat will be available, and so how many people do I have to invite to share in my Korban Pesach to eat it. But of course, if it's only Elul Nuyav, this is after, it has to be, why, how could you possibly let people in afterwards? That's not possible, because the reality is they weren't signed up. If somebody walked in off the street and sat down at the table, so this has to be after Churban Bayis, after the destruction of the temple, when there was no more Churban Pesach, or actually it wouldn't be till after the Bar Kokhba revolt, because there is some Rabbanim are of the opinion that from the destruction of the temple until the Bar Kokhba revolts, and until they put down the Bar Kokhba revolt for that 50-year period, that they were still shechting the Korban Pesach. Kol Dichrin Yesev Yechol, whoever wants to come in is invited to come to the table, and however, Kol Ditzrich Yesev Yisach. Now, there are some people, and this is the problem. If it's be after the Korban, then Kol Ditzrich Yesev Yechol. If it's before that, Kol Ditzrich, whoever needs to be able to be yotze with eating a piece of the Korban Pesach, whoever is, besides who those who want, there are people who need to eat from the Korban Pesach because they weren't able to get a portion, they're stragglers and latecomers, then they can come in and be mekayim the mitzvah of eating from the Korban Pesach. Now comes the problematic words over here. We have two sentences at the end. It says, Hoshata hocha l'shona haba bi'ara di Yisrael, and it's written in Aramaic, and at the end it says, Hoshata avdi l'shona haba b'nei chorim, ends in Hebrew, and it's two different things that we say. This year, we hope that next year we'll be in the land of Israel. What do the people today, we have Kanai Nahara, 6 to 7 million Jews living in the land of Israel. How many from or actually make a Seder and say Holach Ma'anya, that's unimportant. But the reality is, what do they say? They are living in Eretz Israel. Hoshat l'shona ha'ocha l'shona ha'bo, excuse me, Hoshat ha'ocha l'shona ha'bo here. Now, right now, we're here in Golos. L'shona ha'bo, we are in Israel. We should be in the land of Israel. But they are in the land of Israel. So how do they say this pasuk? Well, the truth is that they actually, a lot of these people would add the words Li'arad Yisrael Habanuya and Hoshata Avde Lushona Habo B'nei Chorin. So Hoshata Avde, because even the Jews that are living in Eretz Yisrael are still, if you notice, there's a is a punctuation mark after Avdei, because even the Jews that are living in Eretz Yisrael, as we see, certainly, are we a unified nation? Look what's going on in Israel today with all the, you know, with all the protests and various things that are finally quieted down to some degree. But the fact remains, we're still Avodim. We are still, it didn't end, it's not over yet. The Golos is still amongst us. So Hashata Avdei, we, Lashona Haba, B'nai Chorin, at least, even the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, next year, at least we should be truly B'nai Chorin. And then when we finish with that, we get to the Manashtana. This is a very interesting thought process which ties into the Arba Bonim completely if we examine it very carefully. Not too carefully, you don't have to. So we begin by saying, of course, the youngest son begins to ask. It doesn't matter, but we all have to say it. Manashtana halaylo azeh mikol halaylos. And so there are four questions, and we know there are so many things that we do in fours. But each one is a separate, it goes on its own. Of course, the Gemara, of course, mentions that even numbers are not lucky. Odd numbers are lucky, but even numbers we don't like to make. So therefore, we have, why do we drink four cups of wine? Because each cup of wine is a mitzvah by itself, and so it's just four ones, not four as an even number. It's four times one. And so we ask the four questions, but it's interesting that we might think to say, certainly we could think of more than four types of son when we get further into the Haggadah and we say the Arba Bonim, Keneged Arba Bonim. What is Keneged Arba Bonim? The four kashas are Keneged the Arba Bonim. And what do I mean by that? Well, let's examine the four questions. The Haggadah begins, the first question is, Shebechol Halelos Onu Ochlin Chametzu Matzah. What does the Chacham, and notice that we don't say the Tzaddik, because a Tzaddik is never a good role model for one simple reason, because he'll just do whatever he's told. He's a Tzaddik, he does something, and you tell him once, and he will trust you, and he'll do it. That's a wonderful thing, it's great, but it's more important, he doesn't necessarily know why, he's just doing it. You have a lot of Jews who will do whatever they're told, which is wonderful, and they have that faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yet they don't know. If I ask somebody to explain something to me, why he does it, he wouldn't be able to explain it to me. It's more important to pass on Jewish tradition to be able to understand why we do everything, as long as we don't we accept the fact that sometimes there won't be, or we will not understand the reason, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Chukim and Mishpatim. Some things are more easily understandable and some things we don't, but nevertheless, we trust Him that we're going to do it. But so the Chacham, he would like to know, and his observation is as follows. The Chacham asked the first question, Shebechol Halelos Onu Ochlin Chametzu Matzah. All year long, it's not that I remember Pesach by eating matzah to say that. The fact remains, I eat matzah all year long. Some people like matzah. I wasn't a big fan of matzah during the year. My sister loved matzah more than challah. But the point is, on Oakland Chametzu Matzah, we alternate. Sometimes we eat challah, sometimes we eat matzah, and that's fine. But on this night, it's kulo matzah. We eat only matzah. So I would think that as long as perhaps, let me ask you, what is so important about not eating bread? I will sit down at the table, and I used to laugh when I was younger, I wasn't a kid anymore, but I was doing business with Ratners, and they were open on Pesach, and when I would look in the window, of course I wouldn't go in there, they were open on Pesach, and if you looked on inside the window, you would see that while they would serve you onion rolls, they had a box of matzah on every table to remind us that it's Pesach, and they're giving you, should you want to eat matzah as well, you could eat matzah. Maybe that should be enough. So the Chacham is saying, perhaps that I understand the necessary to each, you know, five tzeisim throughout the Seder, I have to have matzah, maror, and afikomen, and all these things with the matzah. But in the middle, while I'm having it, I could have chametz too. Why not? So b'chol halel, so all year long we eat chametz and matzah. So I need to please explain to me, this is an, more of an intelligent question, and therefore, because while I can do certain things and I could, I'm able to do, I have to wash for bread, so it doesn't matter if I'm washing for matzah or challah, you know, I could be makabel and have the right kavana that I'm eating the matzah, l'shem matzah's mitzvah, and then later on I'll have a piece of challah too. Why do I am only designated to eat only challah? I'm restricted to eat only matzah. And that is the question of a chacham. The next one we move on to, though, is the Rasha. What is the question of a Rasha? The Rasha says, mo'avodah zos lochem, because as I explained last night, he's not going to do anything until he understands it. We said that the chacham, last night he says, kisholcho bincho mochor le'mor mazos, he will first do what he's told, and tomorrow you'll explain it to him later, but in the meantime, I'll do what I'm told. The chacham, the Rasha is not going to do anything until he understands why, and if he doesn't like it, then he just rejects it. So he says, mo'avodah. So what does all this have to do? I believe in God, so I have to put on my tulin every day. It's not necessary. So he says, shebechol ha'leilos ano ochlin sh'ayirokos. What do I notice? I'm looking around at everything. We eat all kinds of vegetables. And in the same way, so if the chacham is asking the question that tonight, why can't we eat the chametz? Is a much more severe thing. But sh'ayirokos, on the night of on Pesach, we eat all vegetables, so I'm not restricted to eat only maror. I could eat, we say kulo maror, but that's not really true. You're going to serve me at the karpas, I'm going to have a potato, I'm going to have various vegetables, or yurokos. I could have carrots, radishes, celery, various things, so or maror, and they all qualify as maror. Maror is not restricted to only one thing. So the whole thing seems to be a joke, so I don't really understand why we eat bitter herbs. And the truth is, if we're using romaine lettuce, what's so bitter about that? I don't know why. So what is the symbolism of maror itself? There's no point in this, and I don't understand it. Mo'avodah zos lochem. And so the second question is keneged the Rasha. The third question is for the Tum. The Tum looks around, and he doesn't have these questions that require some thought. He's more simple-minded, and he said not that he's foolish, but he needs more explanation. He's not as learned as somebody else, and he says, you know what I noticed? Shebechol halelos ein ono matilin afilu pamechos. Most of the time when I sit down to eat, I don't have these dips. Maybe I do, maybe I don't, and I don't. We can get through a meal without dipping, and tonight I noticed, in particular, something that's very unusual, right away we put the karpas in the salt water. Later on, we're going to dip the maror in the charoses, and or whatever it is, we dip. And this is something that it's more simple-minded question, and he's saying, this is what I noticed the difference. And so the third question is for him. Interestingly enough, when we get to the fourth question, is should the Eino Yodei Alishol, and why do we say, he just looks around. He's a child, and he doesn't know. He doesn't notice anything different. What is a child when he sits down to eat at the table all year long? He's used to eating whatever his mother gives him. Puts down the food at the table, and this is the way his mother serves him. This is what you're eating today. This is what I'm giving you for breakfast, lunch, and supper, and he eats it. He doesn't not looking around. Why we had this today and this different, why at the Seder we're having this, and why at the Seder we're doing this different. He knows that it's time for a meal. His mother was going to serve him, and he'll eat it. So, apisaklo, the one thing that he does know, though, is that when he's sitting at the table, and kids, sometimes they get on their knees at the table, or they slouch, or whatever it is, and the parent will say to the kid, you're sitting at the table, Sit up straight. And this is one thing that even a child notices something. He says, sit up straight. And suddenly he takes a look around the table. And what is a three-year-old, even a four-year-old, whatever it is, what does he notice? Every year, everybody's yelling to mommy and daddy. I'm always telling everybody who's sitting at the table, sit straight when you eat. And now I see everybody's leaning. All of a sudden, somebody's dreaming. Daddy is eating, he's drinking this cup of wine, and he's leaning to the side. Normally, mommy would say, what are you doing? You don't slouch. You sit up straight when you eat. And this is what a child could realize. In Absaklo, good question, my child. Good question. So let me explain to you why is that we eat leaning today as opposed to the rest of the year. Things don't change. The rest of the year, don't take this as a rule. Only the night of Pesach are we going to lean. This is a once-a-year day. And this is when we do that. And that's why I say the Arba Bonim are connected, these four levels of children that we have. And so we move on to the end of the, after the four kashas. And so now that we've asked all these four questions, we get to the next level. It says, Avodim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. You know, a year ago today, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, B'nai Yisrael, Moshe wants them to see why didn't they dedicate the Mishkan until Pesach, until Chodesh Nisan, was that to say, look back just 1 year. But it's the same thing for all of us. Avodim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, we were sitting down and making a Seder. And this is the day that we left Mitzrayim on the night of the 14th of Nisan, the 15th, we left in the morning, and we pulled up stakes, and we left, and we were out of here. And remember, we used to be Paro B'Mitzrayim. Now, when I want to remember, we sit down and we prepare a Seder plate. When I want to, if you're married X amount of years or whatever it is, and every year you celebrate your anniversary, do you recreate your wedding meal? Do you remember how many of us remember exactly what was served at the wedding, whether you had ribs or chicken or whatever it was, or a flanken or whatever the meal was with the soup? You don't recreate the meal exactly as it was. The difference is on Pesach, we want to recreate everything exactly as it was when they left Mitzrayim with the matzos, ugos, matzos, kilo, chametz. So we have to remember, avodim hoyinu lefaro b'Mitzrayim. Harei onu, and if God didn't take those people out, harei onu uvonenu, v'nei vonenu, mishubadim lefaro, we'd still be, you know why? What were we talking about over here? The Dor HaMidbar, the people who left Mitzrayim, they were literally a lost generation. We know that the slaves that were freed in America after the Civil War, when the slaves were freed, it was very hard for them to adjust to making their own decisions for themselves. And a lot of them remained, not through any fault of their own, obviously, but they remained, at least now they got paid, but they remained working for their old masters because they didn't know how to deal if they were past a certain age. They didn't know how to deal with freedom. And it's like somebody who was in the army for a certain period of time, he's in prison for a certain period of time after you're living a period of time for a long period of time and always being told what to do and never having to make a decision on your own, then you don't know how to go about making a life for yourself. And so this generation, we have to pay homage to the people who left Mitzrayim. They literally sacrificed their lives. Those people possibly on some level might have been better off and would appreciate just continuing the rest of their lives living Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. And that's why we see so many times in the Midbar, Nitna Rosh and Ashuva Mitzrayim, they wanted to go back. These were people who were older people, and all they knew, they lived a long time, and they didn't know how to strike out and make decisions on their own. Those who were less than 20 were able to, while they might have been born into slavery, but at least they were young enough to grow up in the Midbar as free people, their formative years, and be able to, by the time 40 years passed, get into the land of Israel, be able to make decisions for themselves as opposed, and the old generation had to be wiped out in the Midbar because they never could adjust. They went through so many times because they could never adjust to freedom. It's a very difficult adjustment, and we see that it just doesn't work most of the time. Afilu kulanu chachamim, it doesn't matter. I get asked these questions that are sometimes, I get texted at various times during the day, all the week, certainly before Pesach, which is, by the way, I want to say that after the shir is over or if somebody has anything to ask, I'll be happy to field questions, because the Haggadah leaves a lot to be answered, and certainly I'm not going to answer every single question that may cross your mind. So, v'afilu kulonu chachamim, kulonu nirvonim, kulonu zukenim, kulonu miyodim es haTorah. We have the mitzvah because every time we say it, if you've been saying the Haggadah for 20, 30, 40 years, you think, okay, I sat down now, I'm saying the Haggadah for close to 70 years of my life, saying it mila b'mila every year, and probably most of it, you know, we could recite by heart, and every year there are new thoughts. Afilu kulonu chachamim, kulonu nevonim. It always amazes me how while I'm laying down sometimes and mulling over certain things that I said, I say, ah, now I understand it better. Kulonu chachamim, kulonu nevonim. We think we got it, but you don't. Maybe you do. But certainly there are new thoughts that cross your mind that maybe resonate to you more than somebody else. So even if you're very smart, even if you're Einstein, even if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, there are new thoughts that may come to mind and resonate to you that may help you put your best foot forward tomorrow. Mitzvah Olenu, and you know what you get for it? You get a mitzvah. Mitzvah Olenu L'sapir B'mitzvah Yisrael. And the more you do it, the more you impress your children. As I said, that the point is to have the dialogue with your children in a very nice, calm manner and field all the questions. I had so many questions to my father, and he never used to say, just do what I tell you to do. He never said that to me. My mother, maybe, but my father, never. My father was a Rebbe, and he understood. He took every question seriously and gave it thought. And sometimes if he couldn't answer it, he would say, I'll look it up, and we would discuss it at a later time, which was a very important thought process, and we should all have that thought process, is not just to say it, but to delve into it, because there is an explanation somewhere. And therefore, we begin the next story, which is really very important, which is a great lesson. It says, Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shohei Musubim, B'nai Brak. Now, the first thing is, what were they doing in B'nai Brak? B'nai Brak was the home of Rabbi Akiva. And, of course, as we've probably mentioned previously, why would these people go to B'nai Brak? And the Abarbanel makes a very wild statement over here that a B'nai Brak has nothing to do with the name of a town. B'nai Brak, while it may be that they were in B'nai Brak, but Mesubim B'nai Brak, they were leaning at B'nai Brak, that B'nai Brak was a type of chair that was like you would maybe think of as a, today we would call it a Barca lounger, that you could lean back while you were sitting there, because they didn't have like dining room tables. They would have like stack tables that they would eat on, and they would have it next to their whatever it is, Shohim Mesubim B'nai Brak. Of course, most of the Rishonim certainly would take exception to that kind of an explanation, but nevertheless, he doesn't want to discount the fact that they're in B'nai Brak. But if they were in B'nai Brak, well, since they were in B'nai Brak, then why would they all go to Rabbi Akiva? And more so, there's one very important name that's missing from this story over here. And the name that's missing here is the one that you might expect would have been the Nasi, who was Rav Gamliel. And the thought process is that since they were in a cave, where we're told they were in a cave, why would they be these people in B'nai Brak? Why would they be in a cave? Because literally we know the story of the Hasara Halugei Malchus, and they were in hiding at this time. And Rav Gamliel, who, since he was the Nasi, and once again also one of the Asura, one of the people that was, he had a tail on him. Literally, the Romans would have somebody following him at all times, because he would be certainly the person who they would expect to foment rebellion in his day. And but the purpose of them going to Rabbi Akiva was, Rabbi Akiva, as we know in the Gemara, there were at least two stories that the Gemara tells, that he had the end of the story is always Nichamtonu Akiva Nichamtonu. He made them feel better. And since this is very shortly, this story takes place not that long after Churban Bayis, after the destruction of the temple, and they were looking, these rabbis were looking for little Chizuk and were very depressed. But interestingly enough also, they mention a particular story, makes it sound like why we tell this story. First of all, was this story, did it all take place on the night of Pesach? Because it makes it sound like on some level that this was the night that they sat up and learned all year. You know, there are a lot of great Rabbanim who sit up the whole night and they learn all night every day of the year. So why are we saying that this only was on Pesach? You would expect these people, if they sometimes got together, and it certainly would seem that on, if you would be logical enough, that this would be any time but Pesach. Why? Because the thought process would be, the rational thought process would be that everybody would be home with their own families. We strike, the whole idea was that the whole Seder is for the sake of the little children, so each one of these rabbis should be home with their families, with their wife leading the Seder. So why would they be alone, gathering together, having, so to speak, a boys' night out? They should be home, and the Romans would be leaving them alone. So the fact remains that this might not be, according to some people, this was not the night of Pesach. So therefore, what is the story mentioned in the Haggadah the way it is? And the important part is that these were five people, that it's very interesting, the life of these five people, why we're specifying the story with these particular five people. Rabbi Eliezer was somebody who, by the time he was the age of 18, couldn't read a letter in Hebrew, couldn't read the Aleph Beis. By the time he was 20, when he was started to learn, and all of this, he grew up in a wealthy family, but because he decided to reject his family's lifestyle with all the wealth, he decided to go and sit and learn and dedicate his life to Torah. So at that point in time, his family disowned him, basically, and he had to just make do with whatever he had, but he dedicated his whole life. This was one type of person, and the whole night of Pesach, we're dealing with a certain type of person. And so Rabbi Eliezer is that type of person who made his dedication. He rejected the mundane and went after the holy and to improve his life. Rabbi Yeshua, and the next person on the list, Rabbi Yeshua, was born poor, lived his whole life. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, he was a very poor person. And when Rabbi Gamliel came to visit him, we know Rabbi Gamliel didn't know even the makeup of what it was. Rabbi Gamliel was very wealthy, and Rabbi came to the house and said, "Your walls are black." We see in the Gemara these stories that he wasn't even aware. And Rabbi Yeshua said, "You don't even know that I'm dedicated to the Torah, but I have nothing to live on. I give my life for the Torah. I had nothing, but I still, this is what I do. I'm not trying to shirk my duties, and I understand the responsibility." Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he was a Kohen Miyuchas. He came, he was a straight line from Ezra HaSofer. He was a Kohen that they appointed him. He was only 18 years old, and guess what? He was a Nasi. Now, what does that say? When I started the shiur, and I said at the beginning of the shiur that the end of the Haftorah was that the Heshiv Levavos Abonim Velev Bonim Alavosam. This highlights that whole process. Imagine there are these great people. Look at the names in this story: Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, and Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon was the older man in this story, and he was already 90 at this point in time, and they're willing to appoint the leader of their whole tribe, the leader of Klal Yisrael, to be the Nasi, an 18-year-old person, because it was simply a meritocracy. They knew he had yichus, and they respected his knowledge, even though he was by far the youngest among them. But it had nothing to do with age. That is the sign of great tzaddikim. They recognize, don't say, "Listen, you'll earn your stripes, put in the time, and then, you know, you'll move up the table. Now you're on the dais, but you're at the end of the table. And after a few years, you'll get closer to the center, and maybe one day you could aspire to be the Nasi." Here he is, 18 years old, and they had together, they all got together in that story that the Gemara tells, and they appointed an 18-year-old boy as the Nasi. So, and then Rabbi Akiva, who again was somebody who was, till he was 40, he absolutely learned nothing. Much worse than Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus in Rabbi Akiva, was somebody at the age of 40 first began to dedicate his life, and he married his wife Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua. He married into wealth, but he gave his whole life to Torah. And Rabbi Tarfon, who was an extremely wealthy person, but guess what? What comes with wealth is a lot of tirdis. You don't have time. I wish I had time to sit and learn. You know what? I have real estate holdings. I have so much money invested in the market. I have so many people in the banking business that are calling me day and night and texting me, and I don't have a minute to open up a safer. Rabbi Tarfon said, I have all this money, and I have tirdis. But you know what? First things first. As I mentioned a couple of years ago, I know I was at work one time and my mother called me and asked me to do something, and I said, I'm too busy now. I can't do anything. And I'll tell you what, I didn't even get to, because I used to have to be at work 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. It was too early to daven. And I said, I didn't even daven yet. I have to first daven. It was almost 9 o'clock in the morning, and my mother said, oh, she understands, and she hung up. A day or two later, she calls me back, and she said, I just want you to know, with her sense of humor, and she said to me, which I got the message right away. She said, I called up God, and I spoke to him, and I told him your problems, and I told him that please don't be angry with my son, because he has work to do, and he didn't get around to davening yet, and even though sometimes he davens late, you know, he shouldn't be angry. And she said, but God told us, so I'm giving you the message God told me to say. He understands completely, but at least sometimes, once in a while, I should think of him first. So I just want to tell you, when she hung up. And it was her sense of humor, that was that biting sense of humor that I lived with. But that was a very interesting story, the way she said, I got the message, of course. First things first. And that was Rabbi Tarfon. He knows he had all this business to take care of, but first things first. The most important thing is I'm a Kohen, and I have that mind, and I have responsibility to call Israel, and that's what it is. So that's why it tells us, Shoyim and Suvim and Abrach, these five people from five different walks of life, from all different lifestyles, dedicated their life to the pursuit of Torah, and that's the importance. And they were sitting and learning the whole night, and Ashebol Tamidehem Yomer Rabbeinu Higias Man Kriyas Man Shel Shacharis. They were so lost in conversation, and it's easy to understand sometimes you lose track of time. Of course, we want to say that if they were in the cave, they didn't see it light, it's dark all the time, but whatever the situation was, it's not important. The scenario of telling this particular story, that it was these five people, and that's why the Haggadah mentions five people from five different walks of life. So what's your excuse, so to speak? Where are you? Aren't you part of one of these five people? Your lifestyle, you know, you say you started late, or there are people listening to the shir who grew up non-frum and became Baal Shuvas. There are people who were sitting and learning all their life and did whatever they're told, but they didn't understand it, or they just were too busy. They show me Torah and mitzvos, but they just don't have the ability to sit and learn because time is so valuable to them. They have a big family, but where are your priorities? And I always remember, again, because these are the important things that shape a person's life. When my father called me to ask me something upshot in a piece of Gemara, and I said, I'll have to call you back. It was going to take me a while to figure it out. He was a Rebbe, but he knew I had been learning that piece of Gemara, and he wanted to discuss it with me. And I said, I had to prepare my blot for the next day, and I wasn't coming yet. I said, the way it is, I didn't finish my own work yet. When I'll get around to what you're asking me, I'm feeling like I'm going crazy because I might be up the whole night. And my father said to me, you want me to feel sorry for you? I don't. So if you don't sleep the whole night tonight, that's the way it is. If you're learning and you have a responsibility to teach and you have the block tomorrow to appear and you don't sleep tonight, that's the way life is. You don't sleep tonight. That's all. There's nothing more I could say. I don't feel bad. We want to discuss this now. When we're finished, you'll go back to your work. But everything was a lesson. And that's why I said, while my grandfather died as a Rebbe all his life, and he died with a chometz in his hand, he taught Torah all his life, and even in death, it was a lesson. Because I still remember when I had the chometz in my hand that my grandfather gave to me, my father said right away, go burn the chometz first, and then come back, which I did. And then he said, remember this, Tluchei mitzvah einin nizakin. So it was a teaching experience that my grandfather left me, and my father said to me right away. He died. The situation was what he found out when he spoke to his mother, and she called out to him as we had left and said she thinks she was immobile yet, an old lady, and she was in her 80s and didn't walk well. She thinks that she might have left the gas on in the kitchen, and he turned around and took one step back to go back towards the kitchen, and he broke his level of his continuity of doing the mitzvah. And that's when he collapsed and died. My father, you know, saw that that's what happened at the end, and that's the way he said to me. So even at that moment, it was Shluchei Mitzvah Einin Nizakin, and that was the lesson. At that moment, he had lost his father. He wasn't, he was a fairly young man, my father. I was only 8 years old, and my father wasn't very old. He was not even 40 yet at the time, and he lost his father. But the process was that Torah took precedence over any of the feelings that might have gone on. And when everybody was at the Seder that night, since it was Erev Pesach, the family, whoever could fly in for that moment, my father was one of 9 children, and at the Seder, it was a very morbid scene. There was not very happy Seder, seemingly, at the time. And my grandmother banged her fist on the table and said, it's Pesach. She had lost her husband a few hours before. And she said, it's Pesach, Medavsan Freilach. You have to be happy for what you have. And not to say it lightened the mood, but it certainly shook everybody up. And this is what we have so many people who live through the tragedies that they live through all the various things that Jews have endured through the ages. This is what they go through. So now we go on to the next, and because we mentioned Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah here, and that he was 18 years old, imagine this person having the responsibility over all these older people and thinking about it, that he's only 18, and now he holds sway over all these greats that he was always looking up to his whole life, and now he's in charge. How do I deal with that situation? And he cries out to God, basically. Harei ani kiven shiv mishona. He makes an observation. I was like 70 years old. We know the story that his beard turned gray overnight, so at least he had the appearance of an older person. Until Ben Zoma said all these things. Now you would think, when you would see a child say, I never saw this in my entire life, and the kid is 10 years old, you would laugh because you say, your entire life, you're only 10. What good have you done? It's like I heard one rabbi make a speech at a child's bar mitzvah. He says, what can I say about the bar mitzvah boy? He's a nice kid, but he's only 13. So what really the speech is going to be about his parents who've lived their life and they've brought up a nice child to be a shomer Torah mitzvahs. The child hasn't accomplished anything yet in his life. So there's really nothing to say much about the bar mitzvah boy. So here is, he's the nasi, but he's only 18 years old. And now he says, in my entire life, I was never zocher to have everybody, you know, to make an observation that everybody said that is shot in the Torah, and that's what it is, until Ben Zoma came. What was he so concerned about? Why would he say that? Because the reality is, who was Zoma? Shimon Ben Zoma at this point in time was 16. So he's looking, everything is relative. So he's 18 years old, and though he's the Nasi, somebody who was only 16, which again highlights the fact that the Chachamim were never concerned with age. The Heshiv, again, all these things are to elucidate, to highlight. The Heshiv Levavos Habonim, the Chachamim, it was a meritocracy. I don't care how old you are, and I don't care how young you are. If you deserve it, you got it. So then Zoma came up and said something, and they say, don't bother us? No. An 18-year-old was in charge. A 16-year-old made an observation, and everybody said, that's, you know what? You have convinced us. That is what the Chachamim said, their own thing, but they took what he said and they quoted in the Haggadah. Just to say that we're willing to quote, even though the Chachamim say this is pshat, but they quote a 16-year-old and say it was worthy of mentioning. And in fact, we know the story of Arba Nechman Sula Pardes, the four people, Rabbi Akiva, Shimon ben Zoma, Shimon ben Azai, and Elisha ben Avuya, who went and had this out-of-body experience, and ben Azai and ben Zoma, who were very young at the time, they lost their mind, or one of them lost their mind, one of them died, even because of the experience was so overwhelming, their heart couldn't handle it, and Elisha ben Avuya became an agnostic for various reasons. The Chachamim discussed it, and the Mefarshim discussed it, not for now. Rabbi Akiva was the only one who was Yatzi B'Shalom, and he was able to withstand the whole experience. And so now we move on to the next story is, because of all of this, that all these people who gave their lives, lock, stock, and barrel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even though they knew so much and they had been learning all their lives, you think they had time with all their troubles that they had to go through running around to sit and discuss something that they had been discussing day in and day out their whole life. It's not as if they had read books from Rashi and Tosfos and all that. They didn't exist yet. What were they sitting and discussing? The Torah. But they had time for that. They made it their priority. And therefore, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Tov Yama Yisrael, because without it, what would we do? We would have nothing to live for. And you know what? Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Keneged Arba Bonav Divrei Torah. What we see by sitting up all night, all of these things that happened, the stories that we're illustrating now, the Haggadah is giving us a sequence of wording here, is to say, it is for this reason that we thank God for the Torah that he gave us, that the ability to focus on through all our tzoros. Today, you are a lot of people, we need something to distract us from our tzoros. And whether you believe you focus on your sports or whatever it is, what do they have to focus on over there? God gave them the Torah. He gave them focus, something to distract them from all their tzoros. They're running around hiding from the Romans. We think about their lives. They had like the Sperry Rand think tank, all these things. It wasn't like that. They were busy running for their lives. They were living their lives in terror. But they were able to sit up a whole night and discuss and think about the Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the wonderful things that God did for them, which is a phenomenal situation. And then we mentioned these four types of sun, which we highlighted in the Manashtana, which we talked about. But noticing one thing that, just to point out, one very interesting thing about the answer that we give to the Russia, and this was pointed out by Rav Yoshe Ben Soloveitchik, when he says, what is it says, lochem v'lo lo, lefisha hosiyas atzum min haklal, kofabikov, and then it says, v'yata hake yeshinov, and we discussed that in various things. We have so many things to say about it. And what do you say, bavur zeh oso Hashem li b'tzeisi mi b'tzrayim, li v'lo lo. What in the world is that language saying? You would think that we're supposed to have a dialogue. The other ones say, the afoto amor lo, and you say to him, the chacham, you answer him, the tom, you say to him, and the sheinu de elisho, the language is you talk to him. The Russia, it doesn't say for 1 minute that you talk to him. It doesn't say that this is what you answer him. It says, the amor lo, you say to him what? Bavur ze oso Hashem li b'tzeisi mitzrayim, li v'lo l'cha. Shouldn't it be me and not you? It says li v'lo lo, because the truth of the matter is, when somebody is dyed in the wool and he's that in the classification that we're in the Haggadah, we're saying he is a Russia. He's been designated as such, and he's shown his true colors to be a Russia. you will never do anything that can possibly change him. You know what will happen? If you sit with him long enough, it's more than likely that he will make inroads in your mental capacity, in your belief system. He will make inroads in you. So what you have to do is close your eyes, bow your head and see, if he were there, God wouldn't have saved him. Thank God. If I were there, at least my belief system, I trust and have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, I would be deserving to go out, but not him. You're not talking to him anymore. Ilu Hayosham, if he were there, talking in the third person, if he were there, you're not discussing anything with him. Lo Hayonikol, he would have died in Mitzrayim. God never would have taken him out. He would have died there. He would have been one of the people who did not leave, and therefore he would have died in the tragedy there and stayed in Mitzrayim. And that is a very interesting thought process, as opposed to the other one. It says you talk directly to them, but not to Russia. Doesn't pay. The conversation is over. And that's a very interesting thought process. Now, Yochel Merichso, this Talmud Lomer Bayomahu, and you might think that, you know what, we have, you know, we just like we mentioned, we highlighted a story that didn't necessarily happen on Pesach. So listen, there's a mitzvah of Zechira, Yetzias Mitzrayim. We say Kriya Shema, and twice a day we mention in Ezra Savaseinu, we talk about part of davening. We say Yosh Yashir and Vayosha, and we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim time and time again every day in the davening. And the truth of the matter is, when you make Kiddush at night, Chazal tell us you yotze the mitzvah of Zechira, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Balelos, on the night of Pesach, just by making Kiddush. And so therefore, why do I have to get into all these things now? But Yochel Merish Chodesh, you would think that, yeah, so you know what? I would think that possibly that just the way I say it, we say the mitzvah is Zechirat, Yisiyas Mitzrayim, L'Stapim, Yisiyas Mitzrayim. I could do that every Shabbos when we're discussing the parasha, certainly when we're doing all of Shemos, in Vayikra and Bamidbar, we're discussing the Jewish life for 40 years in the Midbar and all the things that they had to go through to endure till they get into the land of Eretz Yisrael and Yoshua. We're thinking about all these things. And so why Dafka on the night of Pesach? Because that's the night when we're focusing on, we see the end of the story. And that's why we start the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim at a certain point where the Machlokas began. Yochel Merish Chodesh Talmud Lomer Bayomahu. On this day, it's important that you do it. And that's when you discuss, when you have the focal point, you see the matzah, the maror in front of you, and now you could discuss it intelligently, and at least it'll generate the conversation. Why this and why that, and then give that eternal answer, which is Kadesha Yishalu Hatinokos. We try to do things that the children will ask, because as we see in the other story, there were no children with the Rabbanim there. And so that's not the Ika, that you sit around and you discuss it, but the important thing is to sit when you have a Seder, B'sheyesh Matzo Umarim, Nachum Lefonecha, with your whole family. That's when I want you to discuss all these things, not when you're with your buddies, so to speak, having a night out and discussing things, which is very nice and laudable, and it's a big mitzvah, but the important thing is at least that having that conversation with the other members of your family, not like that story. And so now we get to the point, God took us out of Mitzrayim, but we always like to know today, the thought process is always, we try to understand the mind of a criminal or why something happened for our benefit, why something happened to us that was a tragedy. We want to get to the root cause, as we would like to say. So, we say, you know what, at the beginning, you wouldn't believe it. Look how far, look what God did for us. And you know what? We're all Bali Tshuva. Because at the beginning, Terach was, who was Terach? All the people that lived before Avraham Avinu, and even Avraham Avinu, until he was 52 years old, he didn't recognize God. In other words, he was beginning to have these thoughts and wonder about who was in charge of the universe. But the reality was, he wasn't sure exactly the situation until finally he showed himself and was able to be withstand the Kibshon Eish when he came and became a firm believer, and they threw him in the Kibshon Eish. Obviously, that was a watershed moment in his life, certainly, without a doubt, that he realized that God came to his aid and he survived the whole story and being thrown into the fiery furnace. That sort of solidified his whole lifestyle, certainly. And so we get back. Who brought up Avraham? Imagine the greatness of Avraham Avinu, because who was his father? Did he have a father like I have, who took every question seriously and taught me from the time I was born? And the grandfather who taught him for generations, and it goes back and back and back. So is it a plus on my side that I have the ability to do certain things? Not really, because it's inborn in me. But Avraham, imagine, Terach was his father. Did Terach give him any direction in life to being Avraham Avinu that he turned out to be? Not a chance. People who are Balei Tshuva deserve the greatest. I have friends who obviously never went to yeshiva, and they became from people, and they are Shomer Torah mitzvos. And I look around and I say to people many times, I don't know, I can't honestly say that if I grew up the way they did, that I would have attained what I've attained in my life. Because I don't know that I could have withstood those kind of pressures and all of those things and be able to squelch all my desires and say, I'm not doing this anymore and I'm not doing this anymore. It's tremendous. We have to look at Avraham Avinu. This is where it all began. And so on and so forth. And Avraham begat Yitzhak and Yitzhak Yaakov. And look what all of them had to do. Did they ever complain? They took it on the chin time and time again. There are a lot of people that we hear the stories, Nebuchadnezzar and the Holocaust, that they lost all these things. Some people survived, came out firm believers still. And some people literally lost it. They even survived. Some survivors, obviously, who they lost their faith. You can't blame anybody for that. How many people could withstand those challenges to our survival? You can't. It's very hard. It takes an unbelievable scenario. And they all went through this. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they had the things that they had to endure. And still they remained who they were, true to the religion, true to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, staggers the mind. And still, but they begat Avraham had Yishmael, and Yitzhak had Esau. Look at these tragedies. And Yaakov, look what he had to withstand, the Mechiras Yosef, and all the things with Esau, the Lavan, and all these things. So now, if all of these things are what things that Yaakov had to endure and still keep his things, what is the next step? And therefore we say, Baruch Shomer Haftachos Ol Yisrael. Does the word over here, Yisrael, mean the Jewish people? Not necessarily. Baruch Shomer Haftachos Ol Yisrael. Who did God keep his promise to? Not to Avraham, because he kept the promise to the family, for the legacy, for the years later. But he didn't take Avraham out of Golas. He didn't take Yitzchak out of the Golas. He didn't give him the land of Eretz Yisrael. And he didn't give it even to Yaakov. Yaakov went out to Mitzrayim. But nevertheless, he kept his faith. God kept his faith. Baruch Shomer Haftachos Ol Yisrael. He gave it to Yaakov because Yaakov finally had 12 sons who would at least be able to propagate and be able to inhabit a land. If Avraham were given the land of Israel, how could one person and one son, Yitzhak, take over a land? It doesn't work. At least Yitzhak also couldn't do it with just Yaakov, but Yaakov had at least 12 sons and one daughter who had the ability to plant the roots that Yisrael will grow out of. And that's where it starts. So Baruch Shomer Haftachos Ol Yisrael, Shalkodesh Baruch Hu Tzvishev HaKeit. He had to make the figure until the cape comes along that there would be when there's X amount of millions of people that could actually have what we would call today occupation troops. If for them to take over the land of Israel, how long would it take? How many people do you need for occupation troops? And that's what we would need. We needed a standing army of at least 600,000 people, standing ready, able soldiers to take over and fight for the land. It can't happen until Shachisha Vesakesh, when God saw how many people we had in the Midbar, then he said, now we have the required amount of people to take over the land. And that's what he said. So this is what the Bris Bein Habtzarim is. The question is, when God said, Yodowa Teda, Ki Ger Yies, Harachob, Yeles, Lohem, and it'll be there for 400 years, the Gamet HaGoy Asher Yavodu, you should know that I will judge them. But what happens when we say that, we say, Ki Lo Shalem Avonu Amori Adheno? A lot of people, and we go through the things, a lot of Rishonim speculate that what was Abraham's sin that he told him that you're going to be in Golus for 400 years. It has nothing to do with that. Abraham did not commit any sin. Put that out of your mind. What does it mean, Ki Lo Shalem Avonu Amori? What God doesn't know, the same way with what happened with the story of Yonah and Nineveh. What did God tell Nineveh, did God tell Yonah to do? To go and tell Nineveh that, you know, he wants them to do tshuva. What was God's purpose of having Nineveh do tshuva? Because he wanted Nineveh to destroy, in other words, to take over Klal Yisrael. But if they were big Rishonim, they wouldn't deserve to do that. They wouldn't be deserving of being God's messenger to have that honor, so to speak, of destroying Israel. If the problem is, I would let you go in when you reached a certain point and to that it's time to go into the land of Israel, the problem will be possibly that the Avon Huamori, I can only, I'm a God of justice, and the people who are living in the land, the Nismale HaSod didn't happen yet. They are still, unfortunately, they haven't, the rope hasn't run out on what they've done to be deserved to be kicked out. Ki lo sholem avon huamori. The people, the seven nations that are living at this juncture in the land of Israel, will not, their good graces that I've given them to be occupiers of the land have not run out yet. When their good graces have run out, and then I will let you go in, but not before your time, because I have to give them their due. Ilo shalem avon ha'amori adheno. But nevertheless, even though God realized that it's a very fine line, the problem is at a certain point in time that they reached the Memtesh Shari Tuma, it had to be now or never. The time clock has to be set in motion and sped up somewhat. So now, therefore, what is the next pasuk? Beulamot. Let's get real. We've talked about it in certain generalities, but let's delve into it more clearly. We went out to Mitzrayim to be slaves for 210 years. It was 400 years we were in Golus, so to speak, but 210 years we were slaves in Mitzrayim. What is the root cause of how we ended up in Mitzrayim? And we go back and we say, Mesiras Yosef. Really? I don't know. Say Ulamat. Let's really find out the actual root cause of our going down to Mitzrayim. And you know what? Ma bikesh lovan horami lasos liyakov avinu. You know what? It all began with Arami Oved Avi. That is the beginning of everything. Had Lavan not fooled Yaakov and Yaakov was able to marry Rachel, guess what? The firstborn son would have then been Yosef. And he would have been the Bechor. And Yosef, being favored by his father, would have been expected as the Bechor from the other brothers. They would have had no reason to be jealous. And therefore, the Golus would have had to be someplace else or had it reared its ugly head in another way. We don't know. But that's why we always want to go back and see, how did it all begin? What was really the cause? Who should we really blame? Lavan. And the question then is, why not go further back? And why say, well, maybe we could go back to Esau. Had Yaakov not taken the Bechorah, and had Esau not developed that hatred for Yaakov that decided to kill him, we would have the same thing that he had, that set the wheels in motion that caused him to run away and end up by loving in the first place. Go back another 20, 30 years. Maybe that is the root cause. But on Pesach night, we want to focus on things that end happily. The story with Lavan that going down to Mitzrayim ended off with Yetzias Mitzrayim. If we focus on Esav beginning the Tzara, then there is no happy ending. Because guess what? We are still now, today, in Golos Edom. We have not been freed from our Golos as yet today. Today, on the night of Pesach, we focus on things that have a happy ending, and all's well that ends well. We don't want to say, well, we were slaves to Esav, we had to run away from him, unfortunately we're still running. So what's that to celebrate? At least we celebrate one happy ending, and that's what we do. And we see that, of course, so many of us who have gone through so many tzaras, all these things we look to focus on, Shechiyonu v'kimanu lazman hazeh, we had a happy ending for this. And that's why one of the reasons we don't say Hallel on Purim, of course we like to focus on it didn't happen in the land of Israel, but nevertheless, there are other reasons as well. And one of them is the story of Purim began, they were slaves to Achashverosh. And they were in the midst of between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. They were still suffering in Golos. When the story was over, as great as the miracle was that God saved all their lives, as I'll tell us, Akati Anan Achashverosh, we are still now the slaves of Achashverosh. When the story of the Megillah ended, did things get better? Vayotzem HaMelech Achashverosh Ma'as HaLoretz V'Yayam. The Jews survived, but guess what? They had even more taxes than when the Megillah began. They survived, but they were still in Golos for another 20 years, did not have a happy ending. There was nothing to celebrate just for that one day. But a week later, things were back to usual. We want to focus on Pesach and a happy ending. We left Mitzrayim. B'yot Chazoko was rowing to you. And so now we're up to Onus al Pi Adibur. We want to move on. And it says that how we managed to wax and wane through the times. We came down with 70, and even though Vayoreu Osono Amitrim Vayanunu Vayidu Aleinu Avodah Kosha, but nevertheless Vayisham Lagoy Gadol. We're going to have to stop soon, but nevertheless, Revavoki, and we go through all of these things, but what I want to get to is Vayoreu Osono Amitrim Vayanunu Vayidu Aleinu Avodah Kosha. What happened at that point in time? So if we went down and Paro was so enamored with Yosef and his family, and until we know, until the last 86 years, there was not Avodas Perach, there was not Avodah Kosher until after the death of Levi, and some want to go further than that, but nevertheless, the death of Levi in the calendar leaves 86 years, the numerical value of the word Elohim as Midas Hadin, and therefore we have the last 86 years of the thing, and Laman Anoso B'Sivlo Sam. And what happened? It says, Vayomos Melech Mitzrayim Vayanku B'nei Yisrael Minu Avodah Vayisoku. And what did Paro say? Hava Nishak Malo Pen Yirbeh. Why suddenly would the king, and it says, Vayokom Melech Chadosh Asher Lo Yoda Asher Say. What does that mean, Vayokom Melech Chadosh? Vayokom Melech Chadosh tells us one thing. Historically speaking, this is where it gets very interesting. Why wouldn't, I mean, we have history books. And in our history books, we still know that the what happened in World War I, what happened in World War II, we go back to the Revolutionary War. We know what happened before. How come Paro, even if he's a new Paro, the son of the new Paro, things, stories are handed down that these Jews are wonderful people. It's only because of them we survived. The reason Egypt survived those famine years was because there was this man, Yosef, and the Jews were have become such a major part of our community. We have only them to thank. Why was now the fact that Vayokom Melech Chadosh somebody? Because the reality is, these the king that the Pharaoh came, and it says, doesn't say Vayokom Paro Chadosh, a new Pharaoh came. Vayakam Melech Chadash, because the reality is there was over 100 years, some want to say historically speaking. I'm talking about secular historians as well, not just Jewish historians. This is Egyptian history, that for a period of between 1 and 200 years, Hittite pharaohs came to the throne. They were not Egyptian. Some of the pharaohs had no history of Egypt. They came from the north and they took over. They came from the land of Israel. Hiti, Amori, Aprizi, they lived in the land of Israel, and they were fighting. They had wars with Egypt for a while, and it was over 100, somewhere between 1 and 200 years, where the pharaohs in Egypt were Hittites. They had no relationship with Yosef. Their history was not, their legacy had nothing to do with Yosef whatsoever, shape, or form. They had no goodwill towards the Jews, and there were factions that said, we remember the Jews and they, how good we were. They were good for us, and we have a right, we have to treat them well. But the new administration brings in his own team, and they say, we don't know from anything. Vayakam Melech Chadash Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. And they said, Hava Nishak Malo, how do we know that we could trust them to be loyal? Maybe the next time we go to war with the other Egyptians, the faction of the other Egyptians, they will be on the side of the people that we overthrew in Egypt to get to our throne, being Hittites as we are, running Egypt now. Maybe they will join forces with the old God and overthrow us. So now we have to be clever, hover the schach malo, and put them, make them into slave labor so that they don't have the ability to rise up. And that's Vayaris on Yenu, and this is where we get to that point. And so now we just want to move on all these things, move on to, we get to the Hisha Amda. And we get to the Hisha Amda, what is the importance? Obviously, when we say the Hisha Amda, we have to really remember, but nevertheless, all of these stories that we told, the truth of the matter is, this happened in every generation. Lavosenu velonu. We've all been through, God is telling us. Verevach tosimu ben eder ben eder. We got out of Mitzrayim early, but the fact remains, there will be other tragedies in history. There will be respite. There will be some good years and some bad years. We have to stay the course. V'hi sha'am galav oseinu malanu. Sh'lo echa bilvar omal aleinu l'chal oseinu. There's not just one story. We keep telling all these stories. Unfortunately, the stories keep coming. We could only hope that it's closer to Mashiach than further away, that the end of days is certainly closer, and obviously it is for various reasons. Ela sh'b'chol dov v'dor. You can't say every generation we finally, after World War II, now things will be good. They were for a while. But in truth, how long did it last? We see what's happening now in the world. Sayulaman, things change drastically. Omar Aleinu L'chal Oseinu. But the only person that we could focus on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Miyata, will continue on Tuesday night. Thank you and have a good evening.